good one. Louder or lower? Welcome back to Homeschooled Podcast. I'm Augustino Zoida, the host of the Homeschooled Podcast, and I'm here with my co-host, Kevin Lyons.
That's me.
We actually got him, you guys. We actually got Kevin Lyons in the building.
Woo-hoo.
And we have our guest here today, Samba Grassi. Did I say it right?
Grassi?
Yeah.
Schutte.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What?
Where'd you get Grazie from?
Where'd you get Grazie from, bro?
Isn't your last name Grazie?
No. I wish it was. That's
where did I even get that from?
That's much more graceful than Schutte.
I swear to God, since the time I've known you, I've had it saved in my phone as that.
Samba Grazie?
How do you spell your last name?
Maybe I did you a favor and you're like, hey, Grazie.
I always pronounce it Shoot.
Shoot. In America, it's Shoot.
How do you pronounce your last name?
In Holland, it's Schutte.
But how do you spell it?
S-C-H-U-T-T-E.
That's like on everything?
Well, yeah.
Bro.
Weren't going by anything else when you first moved here?
No. I wish
Where
I was going by
Where the fuck did I get that from?
I don't know.
How did I know this and you didn't?
I mean, hey. That's crazy.
It means thank you in Italian, so maybe you had a... You know.
But it wasn't spelled that way, though.
Oh, well.
I have to show you my phone afterward what I had it spelled as. Why did I have no idea. Dude, for like... How long have you lived here now?
9 years.
For some reason, I thought that was your last name.
No, that's probably why following each other on Instagram, because you can't find me. You're like,
We got it.
All right. Where is Samba Grazie on Instagram?
Show me your Instagram.
No, seriously.
I don't know, dude. I'm using my phone to film right now, but afterwards I'm going to show you what I have here.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's something with a G. I don't and you're like, who the hell?
I know, like, Samba Grazie.
Yeah, that's not what I have saved.
All right, well, that's
not... I have no idea where I got that from.
Nice to meet you.
You didn't have a...
officially.
You didn't have a stage name, nothing like that. Dude.
But I love that you thought that my last name was Grazie.
You started performing at the club where I worked at.
Ha ha. The ha ha.
Like, when you first got there.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where I got that name. I'm embarrassed.
No, don't be.
It's so crazy. I have no idea where that came from.
No one addresses one another with their last name anyway.
That's true. I mean, comics do. Comedians do.
You should be more embarrassed that you're wearing your same sweatshirt, like, but different colors in 3 days.
Why is it embarrassing if it's different?
It's just funny. I know. I'm just messing with you.
But anyway, Shoot.
Shoot. Yeah. Like,
Samba Shoot.
Yes, sir.
This is the first time I've ever said those words out loud.
That's crazy. It sounds good coming out of your mouth.
All right. Samba Shoot is here today. We're good friends.
Yeah. I know. Seriously. I've known Agostino for 9 years.
That's insane, dude. Yeah. I'm almost contemplating editing that out because it makes me look like so bad. I don't even know where I got that from.
That's fine.
In my defense, I don't even think that I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure your last name is...
He's been calling me Kevin for like 11 years. My name is Ben.
He just has a thing. It's just...
Oh, man. But anyway...
Sounds like a superhero.
Thank you for being here, dude.
No worries, man.
That's so random.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you're here.
Happy to be here, man. We found the time
for you to make it in.
Yeah.
And thank you to the listeners who are tuning in. I know it's got a lot of options out there for podcasts. So the fact that you're here, it means a lot to us.
Yes,
and if you're returning or you're new, whatever, welcome. Okay. Before we begin, this episode is brought to you by Pet Insurance Embrace. Embrace Pet Insurance. That is the sponsor of today's episode. It is very, very important, you guys, to get insurance on your pet, because anything can go wrong just as much as it can go wrong with you or your kid or another loved one. Something can go wrong with your pet. And let's face it, your pets are a part of the family too. They're like your kids. You got any kids, Samba?
No, I don't.
You got any pets?
I used to in Ethiopia when I grew up. I had 7 dogs.
Damn, bro.
Yeah.
Wow.
None of them had insurance.
Yeah. I mean, did you?
No.
But listen, out here, you guys, it's out here. It's the law. You have to have insurance. But listen, I think it's as important as you know, yourself or a loved one getting insured, because anything could happen to a dog, you know, or your cat or whatever it is. You know, they run out of the house, they get hit by a car, they eat something they're not supposed to, they swallow something that ends up, you know, having to be surgically removed. It gets expensive. Even to go take your dog to the vet, I mean, you're spending $200, all right? Listen, you guys, this is insurance for your pet, okay? All I'm asking you to do is click the link in the description and get yourself a quote. That's it, you guys. Just check it out. Just see if it's affordable for you, if it's something you can do right now. Just get the quote. It's not going to cost you nothing to get a quote. And just click the link in the description. That's it. There's different plans. You can get, you know, more coverage obviously is going to be more expensive. Less is going to be less expensive. There's coverages for a large animal or a small animal. Just check it out. Click the link in the description. Also, this episode is brought to you by a very important sponsor of ours, which is MasterClass. They're not going away. They've been our sponsors for like over a year now, and I can't stress enough to you the importance of being able to take a class on just about any subject in the comfort of your own home, okay, and on your own budget. Listen, it's hard to follow your dreams. We can all attest to that. It's hard to make time to learn you know, your craft better and to exceed in it, and you want to take a little class, a basics, something, but it's just like, how are you going to get the time to do it? How are you going to get the money to do it? I think that MasterClass is very important for that reason, since you can take a class for writing, acting, comedy, directing, music. I mean, they have it all, you guys. Whatever it is that you're into, I mean, they have cooking classes. Just check it out. You can take it on your own schedule, at your own pace, and it's affordable, okay? You can sign up right now. Normally, it's I believe it's like $90 a class, so, but for $180 you can have access to the entire website for a whole year. So if you're going to take 2 classes anyway, it's already worth it to get the whole year, because now you can do the writing, the comedy, the acting all in one, and nobody's rushing you. You got a year to just go through it. So that's another important one, and the link you will also find in the description of this podcast. All right, you guys, let's get this started. And like I said in the beginning, Samba Shoot is here.
Yeah.
And Kevin Lyons, and I'm Augustino Zoya, and this is Homeschooled Podcast.
Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschool.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
I don't want to do that at all. This is how far we go back, bro. There was no Facebook between you and I ever.
No.
I don't think that we're friends on Facebook.
We're friends on Facebook.
Are we?
Yeah. I just got my Instagram account like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And I'm still figuring it out.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I have just been in communication strictly cell phones.
Cell phone, text, the
since
the
beginning. The
way friends are supposed to communicate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks for being here, dude. Before you got here, before you got here, I met Kevin. We were having an interesting conversation that I had to just go like, hold on a second, because we're just going to have to talk about this on the podcast,
yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
Tell people where you came from.
Sure. So I was born in a country called Mauritania, which is in West Africa in the Sahara Desert. My mom's from there, but my dad's Dutch, hence the weird last name. Schutte Grazie.
So your dad's Italian.
My dad's Italian. So I was born in Mauritania, but when I was 2, we all moved to Ethiopia on the other side of Africa. Ethiopia, you may know from the commercials. With very popular country. So I was raised there till I was 18. Mm. And then when I was 18, I moved to Holland to go to college there. Studied acting there, started my stand-up comedy career there. And then 9 years ago, moved to LA.
What is stand-up like in Holland?
Oh, dreadful.
Really?
Yeah, so when I started, it was still kind of new. So audiences were kind of excited by it, but Dutch audiences don't laugh out loud. They kind of keep to themselves. Like, I've done one-man shows there where I'm on stage for 80 minutes doing my show, and you don't hear any single laughter, you just see the audience go...
But they're just moving their shoulders
up and down, or tears rolling down their cheeks in silence.
Wow.
And then at the end of the show, you do get a standing ovation because they appreciate artists. And I asked someone, I'm like, why'd you not laugh for like 80 minutes? I'm by myself dying up here. Like, it was death. And they're like, oh, we didn't want to bother you. We don't want to interrupt.
Right.
So that's the mentality there. They see comedy as an art.
Yeah.
And they want to watch it and listen. Mm-hmm. Whereas here in America, man, it's the best because just people laugh.
I was just imagining over there where they're all holding it in quiet. And as soon as the show gets out, they just all run outside and let them all.
Yeah. It's like, not in public.
I was holding that in so long.
I know, seriously. God. I was about to burst, man.
That's not healthy to do that.
No, your appendix goes. It's just the worst.
Yeah. Well, you know, out here in America, we have some people that are just so ready to interrupt you.
I know.
We want the happy medium of just the laughter.
Yeah.
You know, and then you time your jokes around the laughter and you breathe in the right parts so that they can laugh and you pause in the right parts.
Yeah.
And, you know, then there's guys that they just yell out at the wrong times and stuff like that. But they're so polite, they don't even want to laugh to bother you. Like, I've heard that several countries are like that. I've heard from people that travel.
Like European countries, because stand-up is so new there. It's better in England. In England, it's worse than here because they will heckle the shit out of you. Yeah. You go on stage and you have to be ready to interact with the guy on the front row.
Yeah.
Because he's going to yell something and you just have to deal with it. It's part of just them testing out your comedy chops without kind of meaning anything like mean or bad or anything. They just want to be like part of the show. That's hard.
I think the Asian culture is like that too. Like in Japan, I remember I heard when Star Wars first came out and they aired it over in Japan, they were nervous that nobody liked it because when the movie was done, nobody cheered or anything. And then afterwards, they found out that the silence was the greatest form of appreciation with like a Japanese audience.
Wow. Nice. That's so Dutch people are really respectful if that's what we're going by, silence.
When I went to Vancouver for the first time, some of the comics that were opening the show were like telling me, you know, I think I struggled my first set there in town. I think it was like a rough crowd. Mm. You know, it happens. And then afterward, the opening comics were telling me like, that's Vancouver. They're very like, they don't laugh out loud. They think it's impolite.
Oh.
And I'm like, really? I'm like, it's just Canada. Like, we're not that far away from each other.
Yeah.
And seriously. And I'm like, are you sure? Maybe you guys just aren't that funny. You know what I mean?
No,
you know what I mean?
We're polite. We're polite. So that's why I love America is just because here you can do your comedy and you get an immediate response.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell immediately if you're doing well or not. Like, people come out to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, that's how I started my career. So it's the Ha Ha Cafe is where I did my first stand-up shows in Los Angeles.
Wow.
Before getting my visa to move over here.
And then, so in Holland, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is that the reason you decided to go to school there? Is because they actually had like programs for acting?
So I couldn't go to university in Africa because there was nothing there. So I decided to go to Holland because my dad was from there, and also because I wanted to go to the acting school there.
Yeah.
So I got my bachelor's in acting and teaching drama. So if acting fails, I can always become a teacher. And then I really wanted to start performing. So I went on stage. There was an open mic at the college I was at, and I wanted to do like a funny monologue as an actor. And they had a microphone and an audience. And so I went on stage. I did my monologue, but it ended up being stand-up comedy because there were moments of laughter and storytelling and setup and punchlines. So everyone was like, oh, you're a stand-up comedian. And I was like, I guess so. So that's how I started doing my stand-up in English. And then when I wanted to make a career for myself, I had to learn Dutch.
Yeah.
And that is a terrible, terrible language.
Really?
Just my last name is Schutte. I mean, that good morning is Goeiemorgen.
Mm.
Like, you gotta be ready with that phlegm at 8 a.m. So I had to learn Dutch to do my comedy in Dutch to have a career in Holland. And so once I did it in Dutch, then things started to take off.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was it so you basically did your monologue and people are like, well, that's stand-up. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But did you decide, well, I guess I'm a stand-up or maybe I should pursue stand-up or is this going to help my acting career or is it a good exercise for acting?
Yeah, I never knew I wanted to become a comedian. Like, even back home in Ethiopia, we had one VHS tape and it was...
for the whole country.
Yeah, we shared it with like 16 million people. It was the one...
Who's got the tape this week?
Yeah, I know. And guess what? It was Bill Cosby. It was Bill Cosby.
Was it really?
Himself, like doing his show.
That's one of my favorite specials.
That was actually one of my favorite specials.
That was your VHS tape that you had in your house?
Yeah, Bill Cosby himself.
Wow.
And then later, a friend got delirious from Eddie Murphy. But before that, I had no idea what stand-up comedy was. I just knew Bill Cosby was on a stage telling stories. And I was like, that's interesting. I'd like to do that one day. But never that I'm a comedian. Just I thought I'm going to become an actor. And then stand-up comedy just fell on my path like that.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I like making people laugh
mm-hmm.
by just me telling a story in front of the microphone. Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of just.
You can tighten that up by twisting. Yeah. I think that's the other way. Yeah, there you go. You know what's fun? I had a similar experience. Sorry, you want to help him with that, Kev? I had a similar experience with. You got it?
I think so.
Okay, cool. I went all limp dick on you. I had a similar experience as you did. I knew that. What the hell is going on in here?
I stepped on the button.
Okay, I knew that I always admired comedic actors, like watching the guys from the movies. I knew that I would always like relate to them a lot.
Yeah.
And I never really knew about stand up. And then eventually, I actually also saw the Bill Cosby himself, which was one of the first stand-up specials I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Actually, it was the first stand-up special I've ever seen. My first like introduction to stand-up comedy was probably a live performance that I went to just because a friend of my dad was doing it and he invited the family.
Nice.
So that was my first introduction into stand-up comedy. And then my first special I watched was Bill Cosby's. And then I quickly started to realize that all these actors that I was like admiring – that they actually came from stand-up roots, including Bill Cosby and, you know, all of them.
Yeah.
And then I, like, you know, I never wanted to be an actor. I just admired the actors.
Right.
And I related to, like, I liked being goofy and stuff like them.
Right.
But then when I found out there were stand-ups, I go, like, same thing. Like, I saw him doing stories and stuff. I'm like, I want to do that.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened to me, too.
Nice.
You know, so that was your only VHS tape, but then somebody got delirious?
Yeah, so...
Did you have a VCR?
We had a VCR, and this was the American... Like, Bill Cosby himself was an American tape, so it was the NTSC system. I don't know if you guys know that. We have PAL, SACOM, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's this old kind of color coding ratio, aspect ratio from the 80s. So we had Bill Cosby himself. We had other VHS tapes, too, but only, like, Bill Cosby for, like, stand-up comedy. And then later on, a friend of mine had... Delirious.
Yeah.
There was one video rental store where they would record American movies with a camera
in
the movie theater.
Like they just hold it up.
Yeah.
And it was a store?
It was a store.
What was it called?
Tizita. Like it was Tizita? Called Tizita Video Rental. And then
was that legal there?
I mean, like for us, it was very normal to like watch a movie while you see someone standing up or eating their popcorn or sneezing during the movie. So that's how we got our VHS tapes. But no, I remember seeing Eddie Murphy and I was like, oh my God, this guy is hilarious. I loved him as an actor. You know, I'd seen him in Coming to America and all this kind of stuff, but I had no idea he did stand-up comedy before that. So when you watch my stand-up, you really see a bit of the influence of Eddie Murphy and Bill Cosby, because I tend not to swear that much. I tell a lot of stories. And at the same time, I do a lot of voices and characters with high energy. So those two really shape like how my stand-up is these days.
Would you say that they're heroes of yours?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Bill Cosby, like because he made me laugh. Of course, with all the things that came out, that was a huge shock. But as a kid and a teenager growing up, like I looked up to him, like and his humor. And then Eddie Murphy, of course, like it was. I'd never seen anything like it. Like,
how do you feel about Bill Cosby now?
I feel sorry that he's in jail because he's such an old man. I mean. If he is guilty and he deserves to, of course, get punished.
Yeah.
It just sucks that it's taken away his whole legacy. Of the work he did. You know, of course, I'm not an advocate for any kind of abuse.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, justice is done. But it's sad that that has erased his body of work, because if you look back at the body of work. It's phenomenal in my eyes.
I'm bizarre about it, dude. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to last as long as you think.
What do you mean?
I think...
Like he's going to get out?
Because you think it erases legacy. I think shortly after he passes away, eventually, because he's getting up there, I think people are just going to... It's going to be like a side note what happened. I think. I mean, it shouldn't be, but...
I don't know.
We've talked plenty of times about how we're able to separate the artist from the art.
Yeah.
And how even if they did something awful...
Yeah. I mean, people still like, listen to Michael Jackson music.
Right. I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, when those things came out, and I've not watched the documentary Finding Neverland, but...
I can't watch it, dude.
I mean, because of what Michael Jackson's music meant to me as a kid and a teenager, I was like, I can't watch that. I mean, you know, respect to the
guys I don't want to watch it just because of how, like, in detail
I've heard
it is.
Graphic and everything, graphic. And I don't need to see it. But it doesn't take away, again, you know, if justice is done, great, but I can't... not listen to the music because
it just sucks that they're terrible people and they were such brilliant artists that we like, you know, I'm a comic because of Bill Cosby,
right?
I mean, I don't condone his behavior, but I also feel like really I don't know about bad, but I feel bizarre about the fact that when I stop and think, I think about this, to be honest with you guys, once a week I think about Bill Cosby sitting in a prison.
Wow.
And I go, I cannot believe Bill Cosby sitting in a prison.
Yeah.
Do you know that I think about it every week to write him a letter? Do you know that? Wow. Have I ever told you that before, really? Kevin?
You
that's why I never told you, because I know he's going to laugh at me. That's why I never told you.
No, I think that's cool, but I was just laughing that you think about every week about writing him a letter. You waste more time thinking about writing a letter than actual like, write him a letter, dude.
Well, I've actually gone and done the research, and I know exactly where to send it.
You have an address? Like,
where I know his cell number where you can send his mail, which I partially don't do it. Big reason I don't do it is I don't know what I want to say. Because I'm not going to do it to go like fan mail.
Right.
And I'm going to do it more like I just wanted to get it off my chest that I'm a comic because of you.
Right.
And it kind of hurt me.
Yeah.
But then he's not going to want to answer that. He may not even read it.
Right.
I also don't send it because I go, maybe he gets a lot of fan mail. Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, isn't he like blind? Can he even read it?
I mean, someone's got his wife maybe.
Think he probably that stuff was probably because he's going to jail. He started going blind. Like same thing with like Harvey Weinstein. As soon as they sentenced
like losing
him,
his walking.
All of a sudden he's like on a walker and he's like passing out on the way to the prison. I think they kind of do that for special treatment.
Maybe.
But get it off your chest. Write it if you have to. Write
it. And I've never said that out loud before, but I think about it once a week about writing that letter to the point where I have the address and the. The not cell number, but like the, I don't know what they call it, like the code that you need to make sure it gets to his department in the prison.
But would you need a response? Like if you write the letter, you're done.
I kind of want a response. I don't think I'm going to get one.
Right.
And I don't think I'm going to get one if I bring up the allegations.
Right.
But I kind of want to bring up the allegations because it's a part of what has
made you feel like
me feel like this. Like I'm bizarre about it. That's the only word I can come up with is it's a bizarre feeling
it
to
is.
Think about.
I think finding the right way to bring it up if you are going to do it would be the best way. I mean, find a functional way to talk about where it's not going to be like, fuck this kid. You know?
Yeah. I have my doubts about anything that's in the mainstream media and that we're told. But on the other hand, I kind of think he did it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know.
I mean, it was like shocking to see all those women come forward. You're like, it felt like a nightmare. You're like, no, not Bill Cosby. You know?
I know.
Yeah.
Man, that was one. But so you go to the video store.
I go to the video store. I watch Bill Cosby, and I
were you buying them or you were renting them?
You know, you rent and you bring them back after 7 days.
Did you rent Bill Cosby?
No, that was someone gave it to us from America. Someone sent it to us from America.
They mailed it.
They mailed it.
That was all they can think to send it.
Yeah, like you know, hey, it's like, what do they need in Ethiopia?
Yeah.
Laughter.
This bit about the dentist.
This bit about the dentist.
Because you know how you guys all go to the dentist.
Yeah, I know, right?
Ethiopia.
No, seriously. So, that aside, we had good things in Ethiopia, but it was just nice to have foreign influences too, just to broaden my perspective of what's possible in career wise.
Did you have a lot of family in America that would send you guys stuff sometimes?
No. All my family's in Africa or in Holland. So it was just a friend that had sent it. And the only things we knew about America, we had an American embassy in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
And every Saturday night, they'd have an American movie playing.
At the embassy?
At the embassy.
That's
so you'd have
cool.
to go to the embassy. You'd have to go through security like hell, like, you know, like airport TSA style. And then once you were in and allowed to go in, they had a small movie theater. And they freaking had Dr. Pepper, which I'd never had in my life. You know, and I fell in love with Dr. Pepper.
They sell it to you?
Yeah,
they sell you snacks and stuff.
They sell you hot dogs, hamburgers, and Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
And you get to watch a movie that's very American. So the first one was
Forrest Gump.
The Postman.
Aww.
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner.
And then Waterworld.
Yes,
Kevin Costner.
I was just talking about Waterworld.
I love Waterworld.
I like it, seriously. I even like The Postman, too.
It was a lot of Kevin Costner movies.
Have you been to the Universal Waterworld show?
Yes.
That's pretty fun, right?
It's fascinating to see. So a lot of Kevin Costner movies and patriotic movies.
What else did you see that you can think of?
The Bodyguard, Kevin Costner.
Man.
Dances with Wolves, Kevin Costner. And I think once it was Rocky or something. So, you know, because he beats the Russian.
Well, when you go to the embassy to watch the movie, was that bootlegged? Or that was the
original
cut?
That was the first time we'd see movies about people eating popcorn or standing up or sneezing.
Guys, we're the ones eating popcorn.
Yeah, seriously. We're like, this is a weird experience.
Wait, is this where they film the movies? Is there a camera behind
exactly,
us?
Exactly, right?
So it was just nice to have some Americans in Ethiopia just to be like, oh my God, America feels like it's a rich country, a popular country. Hmm. Everyone there is super confident. And this is where I want to go one day to do my thing.
To do comedy or
to act. To act. Because I don't know if you guys know this. There's a CD-ROM called Steven Spielberg's Director's Chair. It's a CD-ROM back in the day. It has like 6 CDs in it. And my dad got it for me for Christmas. And what you could do was make a movie with Steven Spielberg on the Universal Studios lot. And it was starring Jennifer Aniston, Quentin Tarantino, Penn and Teller, those magicians. And you could just tell your own, make like shoot a movie with Steven Spielberg
as director. You like all the stock footage.
You had footage, and you could write a script, and then you could footage, shoot shots, master shot, close up, edit it together, and then have a premiere screening. Wow. And you get a review in Variety magazine. And so when I got that as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, I was like, damn, I want to make movies. I want to do this. Like, I want to work. So when I finally got to be on the Universal Studios lot, it was a weird dream, like come true, because it was like something I was visualizing as a 12-year-old kid in Ethiopia.
It was surreal. It must have been like
it really was surreal. So surreal. I was like, that's where the premiere was of my Quentin Tarantino movie with Steven Spielberg. So it was
starring Jennifer
starring Jennifer Aniston and then Penn and Teller. So it was amazing how that came full circle. So the influence of America was always there in my life as a kid. And I always knew eventually I wanted to work here. I just didn't know how, because coming here is a freaking nightmare. It's not an easy country to come to,
right?
For immigrants.
That's what we were talking about.
Yeah, the visa process, just being screened and then making new living here is just, it's a respect to anyone who comes here.
So you were telling me that you came here on an artist visa, basically.
Yeah.
So you had to prove that you were... How did you put an outstanding artist?
Yeah, so the visa title is called Alien of Extraordinary Ability, which sounds like I'm an X-Men character or whatever, but it's a visa for artists, athletes, people who have excelled in their field in their own country.
I hope you still have that visa.
Oh, yeah.
It was a card, right?
Yeah, there's a letter.
Dude, that should be the cover of your album.
It should be, Alien of Extraordinary Ability.
Like, and you seriously. Should call it that.
Yeah, no, it's a freaking amazing title, and it's a real name, like immigration came up with. So basically what you have to do is you have to prove that you were really successful in your country, in your field, by qualifying for certain criteria. So a lot of media attention, high salary, recommendation letters from celebrities, photos with celebrities, all these kind of criteria to show that you're extraordinary.
So what did you do?
Photoshop?
Yeah, Photoshop. No, so basically I was lucky that I won an award in Holland. When I started doing stand-up comedy in Dutch, I won the biggest national comedy award in Holland at a competition, and that allowed me to launch my career.
Wow.
And so that award got me like on a TV show. Like, we did the Dutch version of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, but it was the Dutch version, so not funny. and so with those credits, I was able to get this visa because I proved that I got a national prize, and I got like all this media attention, and so I was able to show immigration, hey man, I'm an alien of extraordinary ability.
But what did you actually show them?
Oh, a whole file of photographs of like all the newspaper clippings that I've been in, photographs with Dutch celebrities. They don't know who a Dutch celebrity is. I can just take a photo with my uncle and say, this is a famous singer in Holland. So photos with Dutch celebrities, bank statements at show, like what I'd make a show.
Wow.
And they had everything on me. My blood type, they had everything on me.
What do you think that the minimum requirement would be in your bank statement?
Basically, you have to prove that you have to show what a typical comedian makes on a night.
Yeah.
In Holland, they pay you well. They pay you 50 euros a show, which is 60 bucks a show.
Okay.
And if you are doing a solo performance in a theater, you can get a deal of $600 to $1,200 a show.
Kind of like a door deal here.
Yeah. So I had to show that I performed, because the show I toured around with, I did 120 times, and I had to show that each time I got at least $1,000. And that's without commission and tax and all that kind of stuff. But they don't know that. But I had to show the statement that, hey, man, look, I'm making more than the comedian who makes 50 bucks a show. So in a way, I'm extraordinary.
Yeah.
and so that was one of the things. And also, you had to get people to write recommendation letters about you. And they had to make you sound like you were the next Tom Cruise. Like, seriously, like the language in the letter is, Samba is the best, da-da-da-da-da. He's one of the top, da-da-da-da-da.
America will be lucky to have him because he's going to contribute to the entertainment industry, his unique perspective. You know, they
Who can write this letter for you?
I had to write some of these letters on behalf of other people because they were very uncomfortable writing that way.
But are they looking for a celebrity to write it?
Yeah.
Or friends of yours?
No, celebrities. People who have worked in the entertainment with me. So directors, producers, studio heads, bookers. So I had to get a few people to write that way for me. I had a comedian here, Tom Rhodes.
Oh, I know Tom Rhodes.
Yeah. He used to live in Holland.
Right, and, that's right.
He's an amazing friend. I did a few shows with him. He used to work in Holland, live in Holland, and then he was out here. Mm-hmm. And so I'd visited him in San Francisco, and I was doing the punchline there on his behalf.
Right.
And I asked him, hey, man, can you write a recommendation letter for me? And he did. And wow. So I had a comedian in America write a letter, so it showed immigration.
Thank you, Tom Rhodes.
Yeah, no, Tom Rhodes. Who was the other guy? Matt Taylor.
Matt Taylor wrote a letter for you?
He wrote a letter for me.
Oh, man. You better watch out. They'd throw you out.
No, because he wrote a letter for me. He helped me out because he was booking shows back then at the Ha Ha Cafe.
Right.
And so he had to write in a letter that when Samba moves to LA, I'm going to book him on a few shows at the Ha Ha Cafe. Like, I just needed somebody to say that so immigration will be like, okay, he's got work lined up when he comes to this
country. Yeah.
So I owe those guys like a huge thank you.
That's incredible. Yeah. And what did Tom Rhodes say? Same thing that you got some shows for you?
I had to write that letter for him. So I had to be like, Samba is amazing. He's the best comedian I've ever seen. You know, like all this stupid language that people wanted to hear for immigration. And I had Tom sign it, send it over, and then boom. I had to file this thick to give to immigration.
Did that give you your visa or your permanent resident?
That got my temporary visa.
Wow.
So then you're on this visa for 3 years, and then you got to find a way to stay in the country. In those 3 years, you have 3 years to basically kick ass and work as hard as possible to get more evidence that you're extraordinary.
Yeah.
To be able to apply for the permanent visa. And so I applied for my green card, and that took 2 years to get because it was stuck in an office in Texas. And the immigration officer there wanted more evidence. So I had to submit more evidence of my work in America.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had to work my butt off from the day I got here.
Yeah. And you got to keep working.
Yeah. And I got to keep working with this green card now so that when it expires in 10 years or I become a citizen, I can still prove that I'm doing extraordinary shit.
Because you might have to renew it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's temporary, too. It's 10 years. It's not permanent.
Right.
It's for 10 years. And then God knows what will happen.
So hopefully you can get your citizenship before then. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So in the meantime, I just got to work my ass off and just, you know, keep proving that I'm achieving things that are cool. So immigration goes, oh, this guy is actually contributing to America.
Talk about motivation to get out there and work.
Well, it's live or die. It's that or go back to Holland where people don't laugh. You know, so the motivation is high.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that drive because it's like you're never easy. You're never settled. But at the same time, it's like, man, we run a marathon before we move to this country. And then when you're in this country, it's a whole other marathon.
That represents stand-up comedy in general.
Right.
You run a marathon to get anywhere you are. And then when you get where you are, it's not over. It's just the beginning of the work.
Yeah.
Man.
So I started doing stand-up comedy at Ha Ha and then at the Comedy Store. And that was going well until I got sick. Like, I got an autoimmune disease. I don't know if you guys...
Right.
Basically, it's vitiligo where you start to turn white. Like you lose your skin pigmentation.
Yeah.
Like Michael Jackson had that. That's how big of a fan I am. So I was losing my pigmentation because I was doing too much comedy and my adrenal glands were out of whack. So the doctors were telling me to stop doing comedy if I wanted to be healthy.
Wow.
So for a while I had to stop doing stand-up comedy so I could heal. And once I healed, now I only perform once in a while. I'm like a gun that has a certain amount of bullets. And each show is a bullet, and it can go to empty unless I reload.
What happens? How does stand-up comedy specifically make it flare up?
The adrenaline. So
anything really that causes adrenaline.
Yeah, and stand-up comedy is like the height of adrenaline. Acting is fine. Like acting on a film set, acting on a web series, whatever. It's not as...
What about when you have sex?
That's like... is that adrenaline, or is that just... freaking pleasure and
I don't know
it's not fight or flight like it's like I'm in this, I'm enjoying this. Stand-up comedy is fight or flight.
Right.
Each time.
And the amount of adrenaline that goes through you when you're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just, if you're doing that consistently.
That's the thing.
Okay. Well, hopefully you're not getting laughed at during sex, too.
So yeah.
or judged.
Yeah,
or
yeah. judged.
Go back to Holland. You can do comedy all the time. No adrenaline.
Silent sex, silent adrenaline, silent shows. No, so I had to stop for a while. So nowadays I only perform stand-up comedy when it's like a show that I think is like, I like this show or whatever. I can't do it like I used to, which was like a couple of days a week, 5 days a week, whatever. So that's why I started focusing more on acting to stay healthy.
Yeah. So, but do you miss it? Are you upset about it?
Of course. I love it. I miss it so much. And I still have ideas for jokes, so I write it down. And last year I put my like best hour of material on tape just in case it's mm-hmm. like I can never perform again. At least I have my 1 hour right. mm-hmm. on tape, on audio, and some video just so I have that as a record.
Is that the one that Kevin filmed?
No, that was actually an audition for Montreal, the Just for Laughs Festival.
The one that Kevin filmed?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. I didn't get in. Footage looked great. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, no worries.
But I didn't get in, unfortunately. Cause
I didn't get in either.
It's... I have a feeling it's a very fraternal kind of thing to get in there.
Yeah.
Because there's only
if two... you didn't get in, I'm fucked.
No, I'm saying this is just it's this you got to know people and people got to know you, and I don't think I've been out there enough for people to know me to be able to go to Montreal.
But that's where it's a what do they call it, a catch 22?
Yeah.
I don't even know if that makes sense.
Yeah. It is.
Okay, so that's where it gets me.
Mm.
You're going to Montreal.
Yeah.
So they can know you.
Yes, fresh face.
That's the reason to go to, they call it the fresh faces category.
Right.
You go because they call it unrepped.
Yeah.
I'm a stand-up comic who does not have representation. I'm a fresh face.
Yeah.
So you go, and then the point to get there is that there's all this talent agencies. Right. There's all this industry that is going to watch and go, I've never seen this guy before.
Exactly.
So I'm going to represent him. So they're going to get... talent, and you're going to get representation.
Yeah.
So what is the point of already being known?
Yeah.
If I'm already known, I don't want to go to your festival.
Because they want to play it safe these days, especially with movie properties, everything's a sequel because it has a built-in fan. They're definitely going to make money.
Mm-hmm.
That's I mean, at least my interpretation of it is like, oh, yeah, you're unrep, but we want somebody that's a sure thing. That's
right. Gonna,
you know what I mean?
This many followers on Instagram, or he has this, or he's done that, or what. But so that's what makes it unfair, because then you don't really see the fresh-faced talent pool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see a selection made by specific people.
I've also noticed their fresh-faced category every year they're looking for something different, and then you can go see. You can go back through the years on their website and see who the fresh faces were,
right.
Like the eight that they chose or whatever.
Right.
You can go see who they are, and every year it seems like who they're looking for is different, and they're just basically basing it off that. Like this last couple of years, I've noticed it's very they want women, they want homosexuals, they want minority.
Mm.
So that's why I said, if you didn't get it, I'm fucked.
I take one of those boxes. it's just hard. So I'm like, okay, in the meantime, focus on acting, because, you know, that's how it works, too. It's weird in this town. If you have TV credits, suddenly you're respected as a stand-up comedian, even though that has nothing to do with your gift as a stand-up comedian.
Sure.
But that's how it works, unfortunately. So,
and we also had on the podcast maybe a few months ago, Jackson McQueen. You know Jackson McQueen?
No.
He's a hilarious comic, and he was talking about how he got to Montreal. He got in, but the year before he auditioned and did not, and the following year he did, and then we were talking about what was the differences, and he felt that after the first year, he thought, well, he saw what he had to do to get in, and that was to kind of change his act a little bit and write it more like TV friendly.
I see.
Not that you're not, because I think you probably are TV friendly. You don't curse a lot.
I say one or two F words.
Right. Yeah. But he said that he worked the entire year to make his set be a tight, like, 5 minutes of this is ready for Conan.
I see.
This is ready for the Tonight Show tonight. Like, if they call me tonight, I'm ready to go.
Right.
And then the second year, he went back and did that. And it was basically like, you have to do that, and then you have to, that 5 minutes, you have to also paint this picture of, like, I'm this sellable character in a TV show also.
I see.
At the same time as being like, this is my Conan set.
Yeah.
And he got it the next year.
It's a package.
Yes.
I see.
I could do everything except for change the comic that I am.
Hmm.
Like, I can probably structure the writing better for you to get to know me, the character, a little bit better. It's not a matter of me being lazy. It's a matter of me not wanting to
sacrificing your voice, you know, and yeah. changing who you are completely. Because mm-hmm. are you clean? Are you like? Do you have a clean
I don't like to put labels.
But no, he's not clean.
I'm not dirty either.
No.
You know what I mean? If I'm telling you a story and it requires me to say fuck, I'm going to say fuck.
Right.
If it just adds to it. But if I'm saying fuck for no reason, it just you're just dirty. You don't know how to write punchlines.
Right.
But sometimes it does add.
Absolutely. I agree. I have a few words that help make the punchline
I have a lot funnier. Of material that's not dirty at all. Mm-hmm. And then I have, like recently, like maybe three things that I guess could be considered dirty or risque, and it's really just because like that's just what was going on in my life at that time, and it's really not even that. I've always felt that like when comics talk about sex or something, when they're married and they're talking about their wives, it's portrayed as not dirty. Mm-hmm. Like families listen to it, and like husband and wives everywhere listen to it.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about your girlfriend or a girl you're dating,
right.
and you're fucking and all this stuff, it's just like, well, this guy's kind of like a womanizer, you know. But like when you're talking about my wife and I, you know, we, you know, have a little problem in the bedroom, and you go into detail. I don't think people really get offended because they've been there.
Yeah.
The husband and wives has been there.
Yeah. And it just feels like you're a more sane guy mm-hmm. if you have a wife.
But I don't like to say if I'm dirty or clean.
No.
But I'd say like 75% of my set is clean.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But if I come up with something that I go, I want to talk about, I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's good. You don't have to censor yourself just mm-hmm. to fit in a box to go to Montreal, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
But if someone offers me a job
yeah.
paying X amount of money at a casino, can you work 40 minutes clean? Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I got to make that money.
Yeah, no, seriously, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's why I love performing here because audiences love comedy here. There's so much authenticity in the comedians here. Mm-hmm. Like, you're encouraged to find your voice. You're encouraged to be different. You're encouraged to be unique and more. So, I miss it. I miss having my voice I'm on sure. stage, you know.
I don't know what I would do if I was you.
Yeah, so that's why I got into acting more and doing TV and stuff.
That's originally what you wanted to do.
That's what I wanted to do, but I fell in love with comedy in Holland, and then I got to perform in a lot of different countries, and it was just a nice avenue to have your own voice and stories mm-hmm. without any kind of time frame.
Man, American audiences have become like... making comedians rock stars.
Yeah.
They make comedians rock stars. We're really nerds, a lot of us. Yes, you know, we're really like, I love the writing structure. You know what I mean? Like, we really, and we grew up, like, you and I watched Bill Cosby on VHS sitting on the floor. Like, we're really nerds.
Yeah.
But the audiences make us feel like rock stars. Right. They're fans.
Yeah.
They follow you. They support you. They buy your shirts. Like, they are cool people.
Yeah.
And then I feel like another person who's kind of taken that all over the world is Russell Peters
right.
is the Elvis Presley of fucking yeah. stand-up comedy around the world.
Yeah, he's a rock star around the world. Like,
yeah.
Like, I admire him because of everything. Like, he's wherever he performs, doesn't matter mm-hmm. what continent, he's got huge fan bases
because
his humor is so
even Holland, he gets laughs.
Yeah, even in Holland, he freaking gets laughs.
You know, my buddy Jimmy Schubert, opened for him.
Okay, nice.
I think they did a tour. I don't know everywhere mm-hmm. they went, but I know for sure they went to India. And he was saying when they landed in India, he's Elvis Presley.
Oh my God, I
like,
can imagine.
There is a mob of security that has to surround him because there's people waiting at the airport.
Wow.
Like for him when he walks off.
Yeah.
Like it's like, you know that Backstreet Boys video
mm-hmm.
when they're getting on the airplane and all the girls are holding the signs? Like that's
Russell Peters arriving in India. I mean, hey, you know, and what he's shown me is that your stand-up comedy and your career is not just limited to Hollywood and to just Los Angeles or to America. Fans are all over the world. And so if you have humor, if you work the global crowd, you can be bigger than just you would be if you were just in Hollywood, for example, or Los Angeles. Because people consuming TV media, people forget it's not just America, it's the world. And so if you're able to be a comedian that appeals to the world, you're a rock star. And like your global fan base is more important than just the American fan base, I think.
Yeah. So talk to me about this. So now you've been acting a lot more, and then you got this TV show.
Yeah. So last year was awesome because I was at a point where, you know, couldn't do my comedy as much. And all I was like, my only goal for 2019 was put my best hour of material on tape. I did that in February 2nd, the day after my birthday. And 1 week later, I got the audition for Sunnyside, an NBC pilot.
So I was like, whatever, because I was like feeling like I'm about to quit the business. I'm just gonna put my hour on tape, see what the year brings. So this show came up, and I got the pilot, which was a crazy, crazy audition process.
How many times did you have to audition for that? For the pilot?
3 times, and then they had to send that tape to the network to watch.
Okay.
So first time was with Allison Jones, who's an amazing casting director. I had never gone in for her. She's done all these Judd Apatow comedies and stuff. And I was so nervous to go in with her, but I was just like, you know what? She cast Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and that show actually came on TV in Ethiopia.
Wow.
So oh, I was okay. like, I'm gonna tell her that and see what mm-hmm. happens. So I walked in the room and I told her, hey, man, you know, I love your work. I watched you, you know, your show in Ethiopia. She's like, what? I got to hear more about this. And so what happened was we had a more personal connection. She got to know my story. And I auditioned. She liked me, and then got called back with the producers, Mike Schur, Matt Murray, David Miner from 3Arts. They watched the audition. They're like, hey, you're good. So I got called back to the test, the studio test, where I got to read with Cal Penn. He mm-hmm. was the lead of the show. That went well. And what happens is they send the tape to the network, and NBC watches it, and you get an answer the next day. The whole day goes by, phone call from my agent.
Oh, man, nothing. What were you doing when you were waiting
I was playing Assassin's Creed.
Oh, there
like,
you go.
I was just, like, killing people. Getting my nerves out, because it was so nerve-wracking. You're supposed to find out that day, and I got no phone call the whole day. And then it was 8 p.m. I told my wife, you know, screw it. I didn't get it.
Right.
Let me go to Glendale. Let me go to Hot Wings. That's my comfort food. Hot Wings. I was driving to Glendale, and my agent calls, and I see his number on the phone. I'm like, oh, this can be good or it can be bad, right? So I was expecting the worst. I pick up, and he goes, hey, Samba. And he goes,
oh, man. He fucked you over with a sigh.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what? He's like, congratulations. You got the show. I was like, what? So I had to pull over and just kind of process it and some tears, because it was so surreal to me that I was about to stop, and this show happened, and they wanted me. But you think you're there when you book the pilot, and you're not, because you're replaceable at every second.
Did you still go get wings?
I was just about to ask, did you still go get wings?
Absolutely. I got a 40-piece wing. Celebrate, eat my heart out, because it was so surreal. But you think you're there, but you're not.
What was the show supposed to be about?
So the show was about a group of immigrants who are trying to become American citizens. So mm-hmm. it was very close to home, because I was playing... The original character was supposed to be a Somalian doctor who immigrated to America, and he wants to become a citizen. He drives a cab around because he can't get certified as a doctor in America. So I went in and I said, hey, man, I grew up in Ethiopia. I'm not Somalian.
Yeah.
This is my story. And they liked it so much that they're like, you know what? We're going to make the character Ethiopian, because you associate more with Ethiopia. So what that did was, it was the first Ethiopian character on an American sitcom that I got to represent. So I was like, oh, cool. They got my back. But, you know, when you book a pilot, you're not there yet. You have to do the table read at the network. And the table read is like you're in a huge table with all the network heads and all the presidents and all the people you don't know sitting around you. And you're doing the pilot script, or you're reading it as an actor. And when you're done reading it, you're told to leave the room and they discuss. And that's when you can get replaced. Luckily, none of us got replaced. So you're like, okay, good. We're going to shoot the show. So we're shooting the pilot. And every single day, there's someone from NBC there watching the monitors, because still you can get replaced if you don't kill the scene.
And it's a new show. They're gonna make sure
it's a new show.
They invested money,
and then you take the photos for what will be the poster if it gets picked up to series. And you know how you see those posters where it's like the ensemble and they're all hanging out together?
Yeah,
that's bullshit. It's all photoshopped, because what happens?
All individual.
You're all taken individually. So
in case they gotta replace you.
In case you get replaced, because they send the pilot to a test audience in Vegas, and they got a knob. And if they like the show, they turn over. They like something in the show, they turn it one way. If they hate something, they turn it another way. And it's as subjective as possible. So it can be like, I hate this guy's hair, or fuck immigrants, or hey, I like cats, you know, whatever. And based off those test results, they can choose to pick up the pilot, not pick up the pilot, or replace or recast you.
Man.
Finally, the test results come in. NBC says, we like the show, we're going to pick it up to series. So we're all like, oh my God, we're going to get a show. So we filmed 11 episodes, and it aired on NBC and on Hulu. And we got our first season, and it was just nice to be part of a TV show. Like I said, going to Universal Studios, to the lot, and just remembering what it was like doing Steven Spielberg's director's chair as a 12-year-old in Ethiopia, and actually being on a studio lot. And I don't know what the effect of being a series regular on a TV show has done yet, as a stand-up comedian. Mm. It's a TV credit I can go to clubs with and be like, hey, man. But I'm not performing as much, so I don't know what effect that has on it yet. But just being a part of a TV show and on NBC, like, you know, on a Thursday night where they had their Seinfelds and Cheers and Friends and all this kind of stuff, it was just iconic to be a part of that and experience that. So I'm curious to what this year will bring as a result of having been on a TV show.
About the table read, I've always been curious about how these are done. How much of the performance do you actually put into the table read? Because because you don't go 100%, you would figure. I don't know. I was just curious.
You are reading for your life.
Yes, that's right.
So some of the actors were actually going all out, standing up even to perform their lines, like, oh, you shut up, and da 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 da, and like standing up for real.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm just going to do what I did at the audition. So just read it like I did at the audition. Oh, yeah. So
did you stand up?
I did not stand up.
I kept seated.
But my character has, in the audition, I was wearing fake eyeglasses. So what I did was at the table read, I bought my fake eyeglasses so that the NBC people still have an idea of what the character would look like or talk like or whatever. But I felt good, you know, I don't have many punchlines because I'm more the straight man. So I set up everybody. I made sure, let me set up this guy so he can, and let me set up Calpin so he can look, you know. And my character was more the heart, keep it real. And so I felt less pressure to be funny than the other guys who had to actually get the big laughs.
I was going to say, what was it like going from stand-up all the time to being the setup as what you're talking about?
It was interesting. It was interesting because then you're not getting the big laugh. Mm-hmm. And so as a stand-up comedian, you're, of course, dying inside because you're like, I want to do the laugh thing. So it was really interesting to just learn to be respectful of the material and just be like, my purpose is to set this up so they can make the joke, and then the show works.
You guys
do
your job.
It was like a humbling experience.
It was very humbling. Yeah. It took away ego.
Yeah,
I had to just.
How long did it take to film one season?
So one episode a week. So Monday to Friday, we'd shoot at the Universal lot. Long days, like call times were 5:30, 6 a.m., and we'd wrap at 5 p.m. and you'd shoot four scenes a day. So it was moving so fast. It was my first time doing TV, and it was moving so fast. Like you do four scenes a day, you hardly have any time to sit in your trailer. You don't. You know, you just like, you come to set immediately, hair, makeup, wardrobe. Hey, Islamo, we're going to rehearse. You rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. Boom, you shoot. Boom, 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 boom. Close up. Boom, boom, boom. Turn around. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, now next scene, whatever. If you have a costume change, go, go, go. Rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. Shoot, shoot, shoot. Lunch, 30 minutes. And then da, da, da. And so Monday to Friday, you're just doing working, working, working. And then the weekend, you get the script for the next episode. So your weekends, you're not off.
Right.
Because you're preparing the script for the next week, because you can't be lazy. You have to be like, I was like, I can't slack.
Yeah.
Just because I have the job doesn't mean that I can't get replaced or fired. So you constantly feel that pressure of each episode you have to give your 100%. And then you have a table read during the week for the episode that comes in 2 weeks. So you're juggling three scripts at all times.
Man.
Was that the biggest challenge, is remembering the scripts? And
yeah. So I think what it taught me was learning lines quickly.
Mm.
And like Kevin was saying, just being very humble about, okay, don't try to be funny. Just service the material. And of course, my character had some fun moments.
What was the set like? Is there a lot of like in the house stuff, out on the street stuff?
No,
in
so
the
they built a set. So it was
a lot of it took place in a bar.
In
right?
a bar, it was yeah. mostly mm-hmm. in a bar. So it was actually in a bar downtown that we filmed it, in an Irish pub. I forgot the name, and they reconstructed that bar on set. Like with the whole, it looked exactly like the bar downtown. And then we also shot at an apartment in Koreatown, and they reconstructed that apartment like exactly in the studio. So
when you shoot there and mm-hmm. then they recreate it,
yeah.
you only shot there once and then they recreated it?
Yeah, we shot the pilot there.
Oh, okay.
So once it got picked up, they're like, well, to save money, we're just going to build it ourselves.
That's incredible. That's how far we've come. I remember watching television shows where the pilot, the house or whatever, always looked different than when the show actually got picked up. Remember that? Like, you go back and watch like I Love Lucy's pilot.
Yeah,
the set doesn't look anything like what they actually lived on.
No.
And the same with like Everybody Loves Raymond and a couple other shows. Like, that's not the house that they're in the entire show.
Right. So
you can always tell the pilots because it doesn't look like how the show was.
Even our pilot, like if you look at it, it's darker than our rest of our pits. So it's because I guess the lighting was different. They used a different director, different DP. So pilot is just like, hey, here's the test thing. Do you guys like this?
Great. Yeah.
So it was just nice to be a part of a show that deals with immigration, because it's a modern topic now, and also just learning how a sitcom works. And it's helped me learn a lot about writing and being of service to the material and just being humble.
So growing up over there in Ethiopia and Holland and stuff, dreaming about being on the Universal lot, you finally get there, you get to peek behind the curtain. What was the biggest, like, not culture shock, just the biggest shock after being in that world, thinking about it all this time? Like, when you finally got to play in there, what really, like, blew your mind about it?
Just how friendly everyone is to you when you are one of the main actors. Yeah. On the show. Because I've been here 9 years, and I've been working as an extra. You know, I've been working all this kind of stuff where you don't get respected, where you get spat on.
It's nice to have somebody kind of kiss your ass a little bit.
Well, it was just nice to be seen, you know, and just be like, hey, you're here because of your talent, and not just because you're a look that we need for this and that. So it was just nice to be on the Universal lot where everyone was super friendly, super nice, all the people at NBC, and our cast was mainly stand-up comedians, like Joel Keen Booster and Moses Storm, Kieran Diol, and they're all super, super funny. So it was just nice to improvise with them and work with them. And what was really cool about being on the Universal lot was that I had a pass, and so what I could do was walk around. You know how they do the studio tour, Jaws, and all the stuff? So I could just walk around. And his security was like, sir, what are you doing at the War of the Worlds aircraft crash?
Just like, oh, I work here.
Yeah. So that was really cool to be able to walk around those places.
I had a friend who worked there, and she found out I was a huge Back to the Future fan. And so she signed me onto the lot one day, and I just got to walk around too. Nice. So, dude, it's so rad walking around.
I know.
I mean, especially the Universal lot. Yeah. It's just so fucking cool.
No, you walk around, and of course the tour cars keep driving by, and they're like,
and everybody waves at you.
Yeah, they're like, and over there is, I don't know what that is. Everybody here, say hi to well, somebody. Like, asked me, are we supposed to know you? I was like, no.
There's a lot of television and movie history there, man. I love going there, just the feeling of it. So the show just went to one season.
One season, and because this pilot season, I got to test for other pilots.
Nice.
So it was just nice to see the effect of being a series regular on a show, because now you're like, now you go out for auditions for other series regulars, like not just co-stars or something like that. So it was just incredible to see the effect of being on the show.
It bumped you up a little bit.
It bumped me up a little bit. You get a little bit of a quote. So they're like, this is how much he's worth now.
Yeah.
And so I got to audition for a few pilots this season and went to network tests for CBS, which is very different than NBC, by the way, because with CBS, they're super old school. And so... You go through the loops, you know, the first audition, second audition, callback. And then at the studio test before that, they're like, okay, Samba, so we need you to print 20 headshots and bring it to CBS. Deliver it before your audition, kind of thing. I was like, but you can just print it online. You're CBS. You have enough money to print a headshot. And they're like, no, you have to bring 20 headshots to the deliver it to CBS. And I was like, okay, so it's just part of the old school kind of intimidation tactic, I think. So you do that, you deliver your headshots, and then you're like, see you tomorrow for the audition. then you come back, and I did the studio test, and that's a weird experience because I didn't have this with Sunnyside. You're all in a room. All the actors who are testing are in the room, let's say a small living room, and then next door you hear the actors auditioning. So you see who your competition is, and you hear them auditioning.
That's the worst.
So it's just that intimidation tactic of, like, you know, just you got to stay confident in what you do. So I got past the studio test, and it was between me and this other guy for the network test. And the network test is you go again, you're in a small living room, all the headquarters of CBS with all the people. And then they take you to a small theater, like with like a 20-seat theater with this red chairs, you know, and a small stage, and you actually feel like you're about to do a stand-up comedy show, but it's for a TV show. But you feel like you're about to do a stand-up comedy show because there's an audience there, and you're there on the stage performing. So it was a really weird experience of, no, I'm auditioning for a TV show, so I got to keep it like a TV style acting, but at the same time, you want to entertain these people like you're on a stage. So it was just interesting to go to the network test, because with NBC, they just sent the tape, so I didn't have to sit in front of the president of NBC and be terrified to death. Now I had to actually sit in front of, in front of the CBS heads and presidents and executives. I'm like, you're the guy who freaking made Big Bang Theory high. so that was pretty intimidating, but fun to experience.
I'm sure it's all for the good, man.
Yeah.
it's all for the better. And most importantly, what you got from that from season one of Sunnyside was it lifted your spirits and recharged your batteries, because like you said, you were kind of almost about to like give up and just be like, man, I can't do stand up. I'm not getting cast in anything. It was just like, that was just what you, it served its purpose.
Yeah.
You know, you got experience, you had fun.
Yeah.
You got your name, you bumped up a credit, and you made money.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dude, I'm still in this. I'm not going anywhere.
Samba Grazie is here to stay.
Don't you forget it. Oh, man.
No, so anyone who's about to quit, it sounds cheesy, but just give it a second. Do what you have the power to do. The only thing I had the power to do was to put my 1 hour on tape. So if you're anywhere like where you're like, what do I have the power to do? Just do what you can do. And then I guess things happen if you do that.
And that's exactly why this podcast is called Homeschooled. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just you do what you can do when nobody else is really there to help you. So what am I in control of?
Yeah.
And that's another thing that this episode, that these podcasts are about, is just, it's just like guys like us who, or guys like you who, are sharing your experience of like, I was about to be down and then something just, you know, got me back up, and it's the ups and downs, and you're sharing your experience as you're living it, you know, like right now, which I love having, hearing stories like that.
No, thanks, man.
Straight up Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
Let's, I got some shout outs here and then we'll go. What do you guys say about that?
Yeah.
Let's see. What do I got? I got Pod Nation.
Hey, Pod Nation.
Thank you guys. Anthony. Piedra. And my homegirl Amy from Twitter, and Ookie Spooky.
Ookie Spooky's back.
Hell yeah. And that's all I got for you guys right now. Those are the shout outs for this week. Listen, guys, it's Friday, so we're going to close out with our traditional Friday song, because what?
Nothing. I'm like, it's Friday? I'm like, shit.
You know this comes out on Friday.
I know. It's just.
Sorry, now we get.
You got me really excited. I was just like, holy shit, I don't got to work tomorrow.
Hey, we're close, dude. Man. We're close. But yeah, we close out with our usual traditional Friday song, because you know what, man? You don't work for the man. No. You work for you.
That's what it is.
That's what Samba said,
that's
right?
That's the whole message of this podcast.
You get out there and you do what you guys got to do, what you have actually have control of.
Yeah.
And listen, it's hard sometimes. You can't control what other people do. You can't change the world and change what they're doing. But you can start by, like, focusing on what you can control, and also how you perceive it and how it gets you down negatively.
Right.
You know, this gets me down negatively, so it's just how you perceive it. It's just there's something there that you're not seeing.
Yeah. I mean, you always have the power to write something, create something, film something. There's ways, and so just stay creative, and creativity will come.
It lifts your spirits.
Yeah.
It gives us wings.
Is the song for Friday, I Believe I Can Fly, from
I Believe I Can Fly.
And then I just played. But guys, don't forget to click the link in the description for Embrace Pet Insurance and for Masterclass, two very important things. And also upcoming dates. So this comes out Friday. So tonight I will be at the Comedy Store, which is March 6th. I'm at the Comedy Store. And for other upcoming shows, you guys can head over to homeschooledpod.com. Click on tour. You can see all the dates that I got coming up, and including the shirts and the sweatshirts that I'm rocking today, all that stuff. You can get your Homeschool Podcast merch up there. And all the links are there in the description. I want to thank Samba Shoot for coming in today.
Shoot.
Listen, bro, you're lucky I got that far.
Come on, give it.
I want to thank Kevin Lyons for being here.
You're welcome.
And I want to thank all of you guys for tuning in to the Homeschool Podcast. We love you. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time.
Watch your eyes.
Watch your eyes.
Thank you. Look how where did I get this stuff aggressive? I swear to you, it's been in there since the day I met you.
Yeah, when you said that, I was just like, I was like, Samba, have you been lying to me?
I was like, like, well, it's good. That is so
where did that
funny.
Even come from?
Yeah, I gotta take a screenshot of that. You just follow me on Instagram.
I don't know where I got this, but it's hilarious, dude.
I think that, like,
crosses. Are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces draw the same that burn crosses.
Oh, what?
Killing in the name of. Killing in the name of.
Now you do what they told you. Oh, no way. Are you serious? You literally on VHS. Oh, my God. You do what they told you. Yeah, we still have ours.
Well, then fine, give it back.
No, no, no. No, I don't want to take it from you.
No, you're going to take it. No. No,
now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. You now get to what they told ya. You now get to what they told ya. You now get to what they told ya. Those who died are justified for wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. You're justified. Those that died for wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. Those who died are justified for wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. You're justified. Those who died for wearing the badge. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Killing in the name of. You do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. You're under control. Now you do what they told you. Now you do what they told you. You're under control. Now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.